I'm Ben Bergeron. Welcome to the Chasing Excellence show, where we talk about the best practices of affiliate ownership, competing in the sport of CrossFit, and life in general. Today, we're going to talk about building your staff inside a CrossFit affiliate.
There's going to be a whole lot of things that are outside of your control. Let them go. Let them go. Just focus on what is the best thing I can do. The best thing I can do to maximize my potential. My potential. My potential.
Ben, first question that I wanted to ask you, when going back a few years, early days of CrossFit New England, what did the business look like size-wise, however you want to define that, when you were able to, or when you decided to remove yourself from the role of primary coach? And by that, I just mean the person who coaches the most classes. Did you do that because you had to, because you were sort of forced into realizing that I'm not getting all these things done because I'm coaching too much? Or did you see it as an opportunity? If I take myself away from all these classes, I can do X, Y, and Z.
Okay. Great question. So to start off, the time frame that we did that was probably when I was getting to about 125 to 175 members around there. It was probably year two or three of running the business. Up until that point, when we were about 150 members, my wife and I ran almost all the classes, and we were really a part-time gym in the sense. We only ran classes in the mornings and maybe a afternoon class. And we kind of grew that, and we started to hire on more coaches. Obviously, the roles and responsibilities outside of coaching become more important as you grow and develop. From there, I don't want to say it was a necessity, and I wouldn't say I was completely removed, because I continue to coach today. Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right, where I did not become the primary coach. I didn't coach a majority of classes. At this point now, where we are, in probably about 9 years into the business, I still coach one class a day. I have a staff of three or four full-time coaches and three or four part-time coaches. And my role in the business is beyond just what the coaching role is. So I have other people that do that. I have other people that help me with other areas as well. I saw it as an opportunity it's the reason I got into the whole thing, mm-hmm. right? You start an affiliate because you have an affinity and a passion for coaching others and changing people's lives and the CrossFit methodology and coaching in general. So it's something that I hope I never lose or give up. At the same time, I saw it as a necessity in terms of continuing to grow the business. If I'm the CEO, I'm the visionary, I'm the person looking for growth opportunities, pushing it forward, trying to take my vision and put it into action. Well, if I'm still coaching 5, 6, 7 classes a day, everyone knows the extent of effort that goes into those classes. It's almost like a 2-for-1. Coaching 1 hour class is essentially 2 hours of a normal workday, maybe three. It's an exhausting practice if you're doing it well. It's more like putting on performance on Broadway, where, you know, somebody could put on one performance, maybe two a night, but three would be an astronomical task.
But
it's
not like a meeting. It's not like you...
Correct. Yeah. It's not like I'm going in and, you know, starting to do data entry in a computer, right, where you just log 8 hours a day. So in order for me to kind of take my vision and put it into practice and manage the other staff and look for the growth opportunities I thought were available, I saw it as a necessity to pull myself out of some of the really essential roles, which is the most important role, which is coaching, and start to do some of the other stuff. Mm-hmm.
Do you think a lot of people in that position where they maybe need to make that decision really resist it because of, you know, as you said, you got into it to be a coach. You got into it because you loved that part of it. Was that a transition, or do you see that being a transition that people are really resistant to because they're like, well, I'm the coach, that's what I do. The other stuff isn't what I do.
Yeah, I think it's particularly unique to our business, our industry. People are signing up in the early days of the affiliate to be coached by you, or at least by the coaches you have. And every time you pull one of those coaches away from that class, you're essentially breaking a promise to the customers that signed up to be coached by you. You're saying, actually, I know you signed up for me, but I'm stepping away and we're going to slide in Bill, right? And they are not going to like Bill on day one. Whether he's a stud or not, change is scary and people don't like it. They liked the relationship they had with you, and people are ultimately aware of that. Affiliate owners and head coaches are extremely aware. Most of them are extremely aware of that, the sensitivity their members have to that change. Mm-hmm. And that sensitivity and that fear of change is what's holding them back. And rightfully so. Like if you're, if you're just kind of changing at the whim and hiring people and putting people in places anywhere they want, you're probably not very in tune with what your members are looking for. So it's a good thing to be scared of that change. Having said that, there's this necessity where people have to understand there's only so many hours of the day and there's other things that need to be done. Mm-hmm. You are only going to be able to be a coach where you're running 5, 6, 7 classes a day for so long. When I was in my early 20s, you know, or that's when I was doing personal training, when I started with affiliate, I was in my early 30s. I didn't have a family. Mm-hmm. I didn't have other responsibilities. This was the job. This is what I did. It was easier for me to commit the sun up to sun down to the mm-hmm. affiliate and coaching. Well, now I have a few other businesses and I have a pretty sizable family at this point where it's harder for me to commit to the affiliate that way, which is why it's important to bring the right people onto your team. Mm-hmm. And if you bring the right people on your team, you can then do what you need to do, which is work on the business and not in it.
What would you say to somebody who was at that 150, 175 member level, but they said, you know, at the end of the day, I don't want to give up my coaching. Like if that transition is sort of off the table for them and they say, you know, I don't want to do it if I can't coach my 4 classes a day.
Yeah.
What is the alternative? Like, how do you still help them get to where they say they want to go and where they could go with that in mind?
So if they're 150 members that are coaching 4 classes a day and they're not willing to give it up, I would say that's a person, that's a good affiliate owner. Mm-hmm. You at 150 members, you should be coaching at least 4 classes a day. Mm-hmm. That's where it should be. What I'm saying is when you're at 150, 200, 225, 250, and you have some other businesses or you have a family obligations, you have other stuff. So if you're a 28-year-old kid who's single and has no family and you have 125 members and you run 5 classes a day, you don't need anybody else. Mm-hmm. Maybe one part-time coach. Mm-hmm. People are starting off hiring way too many coaches in the beginning. Yeah. These machines, and I call them machines because they can be so efficient. The CrossFit affiliate can be so efficient and run so much leaner than people are. Mm-hmm. I have a second affiliate right now, which has 200 members and there's 2 coaches, mm-hmm. 1 full-time and 1 part-time. And that's it. There is nobody else in the affiliate mm-hmm. at 200 members. Now there's a whole bunch of other gyms opening up that I've seen and talked to, which have 0 members on day 1, but they have a staff of 7.
Right.
Or they have 99 members or 135 members and a staff of 6 or 7. You're at that point, you have to manage a staff mm-hmm. and you have to get people in to coach certain classes. You're not going to develop the relationships you need. In the beginning part of an affiliate, it's all about creating those strong relationships. Yeah. It's essentially the way I actually thought about this today in my affiliate. It's if someone walked into your affiliate and you didn't know who they were, that should feel like someone's walking through your house and mm-hmm. you don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. Imagine if somebody was like, you're just hanging out in the kitchen. Someone walks in the living room, walks into the bathroom, uses the bathroom, yeah. and then walks in the kitchen, start watching TV. Mm-hmm. You kind of be like, hey, I'm Ben.
Right.
That's essentially what it should be like yep. when you are for sure.
And is that like from 0 members to 1,000 members, or is there some point where like that becomes a little bit more expensive?
Yeah, great question. That there is a hard number. That is 0 to 150. From 0 to 150, it's called Dunbar's number. Mm-hmm. It's a sociological fact. I know it's not a fact. I don't know what else to call it. This phenomenon or theory, it's called Dunbar's number, that the human being is capable of 150 meaningful relationships. You can know 150 names. You can know about them and who they are. After that, it starts to break down and cliques start to form and relationship can't be as strong and you might not know people. But under 150, which is the number that you said in the beginning, mm-hmm. if you're coaching 4 classes a day, like, yeah, that's the deal. That's what you signed up for. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you're trying to get out of that too soon, you probably should not be the guy running the ship. Yeah. You should be a partner in the business. Mm-hmm. You should be a coach, mm-hmm. but that's not the role of the head coach / owner. Mm-hmm. You got to be doing the job. You got to be working. You got to be the hardest worker that you know at mm-hmm. that point. You're an entrepreneur starting a business. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not something that's supposed to be easy and you're supposed to walk through and have, you know, the 2 weeks vacation and these sick days and life of an entrepreneur. I think that people have kind of been, I don't know what that saying is, sold a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, believing mm-hmm. that there's this thing that if you just open up, that if you build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. And it's this magical thing that's so easy to run a business. Right. You know, they do the numbers. And if I have 150 members paying $150, that's this much income. Yep. My rent is this much. And maybe there's some overhead with toilet paper and dry erase markers. Oh my gosh. Like this is so easy to break even. I think that they're missing a lot of the stuff in between.
Yeah.
And the biggest one they're missing is how much hard work it takes.
Yeah.
I don't care how much you love CrossFit, you love coaching. It's work. Mm-hmm. Like running a business, period, is work. And that's not to dissuade people. It's the best possible work in the world, in mm-hmm. my opinion. Mm-hmm. There's nothing more rewarding. There's nothing more valuable. There's nothing more enjoyable. But it's not you build it and they come. You got to put in the work.
Mm-hmm. Going again back to the sort of the early days of CrossFit New England, what mistakes did you make, or what mistakes do you see being made in the hiring of whether it's a full-time coach or a part-time coach? What did you do in those early days that maybe you look back on and say, man, that was stupid?
Dozens and dozens and dozens of things. Yeah. I've made way more mistakes than I have had successes. You know, I think that's the life of anybody that's been in business or anybody that's doing something that you're putting yourself out there and trying to take a risk. And truthfully, I mean that. We've made a lot of mistakes. And hopefully that's a lot of stuff we talk about because it's things I've learned from and people can still learn from. And I know for a fact I'm still making mistakes right now. I just don't know what they are. Yeah. But in 5-10 years, I'm going to look back at 2016 and be like, I can't believe we're doing things that way.
Yeah.
Then you're still trying to do things the best you can all the time.
Yep.
In terms of to lead into with the question, in terms of the hiring mistakes we made, like any young manager, like looking to hire, like mm-hmm. anybody that doesn't know appropriate processes or procedures to have in place, my hiring process was, when people ask me what my biggest mistakes are, the hiring process we had was one of the biggest ones I've ever made.
Yeah.
There wasn't one. Mm-hmm. It was essentially find some good athletes in the gym. And do you think that they're pretty good people? And are they your friends? And if they are, let's bring them on staff because you think they'll be good coaches.
Yep.
Have them get their level one. And once they get their level one, they're certified. And once they're certified, they can be on your staff. And that was the process in day one. It was naive and it was misguided. And, We realized it where we had to get to the point where I had to fire a couple of my friends and a couple of my, and they're still current members of the gym, but so did it tactfully, thankfully.
Yeah.
But certainly I did not have a good hiring procedure in place at the time.
Yeah. What would you do knowing that at that time when you were opening the gym, there were lots of things you didn't know yet, right? But going back, like what could you have done differently? Or what, you know, when you see a young affiliate owner who is running a solo shop and like he's ready to do the part-time coach or even maybe a full-time coach, they don't have the systems and like they can't maybe do an internship or like the things that maybe you can do now at CFNE because you've got 10 years and you've got, you know, a staff and whatnot. What maybe are some simple things that an affiliate owner who's entering into that phase where like, okay, I need some help. What are the simple things that they can do to ensure that the person or the first couple of people they get in the door, you know, in 3 months, you're not like, damn it.
Yeah. Love that question. That's something that I wish I had I wish I had even known to ask that question in the beginning. I didn't know. I didn't know I was making mistakes in the beginning. The biggest thing that I can put forth, and it's something that we've implemented recently, meaning in the last 12 months, you know, we've been here for 9-10 years. In the last 12 months, we've implemented this. So we're slow learners.
Still learning.
Yeah. is to hire based off of what's important to you. And that sounds obvious, right? Mm-hmm. But what most people are looking for when they're hiring coaches is coaching acumen. They're trying to hire people that have some presence and attitude, our ability to lead groups, have the ability to see and correct, know how to have some leadership and build relationships with clients. And if they have that, that's what they feel like they have the makings of a good coach. Mm-hmm. And they do. That's mm-hmm. true. But there's specifics to the way that you work and the way you run your affiliate that are different from everybody else. And if you're not clear on what those specifics are, what's important to you, it can lead to emotional clashes later on down the road. If you value really hard work, like you as an entrepreneur, it's what you grew up with. You know, you grew up with this work ethic and you believe that people should want to be at work and work when you're at work, it's go time and you're on the clock and there's no breaks and there's no nothing. And you expect people to go above and beyond the call of duty after their shift is over. You expect them to be helping out and doing other stuff. And well, if that's your expectation, but the person you're hiring, their expectation is, I'm a part-time coach. Mm-hmm. I'm going to come in. I'm going to coach my class. I punch the clock, record my times, say high five, and you know, give some high fives to members and walk out the door. Mm-hmm. That gap between the expected, between the two parties mm-hmm. is going to lead to crazy emotional clashes down the road.
Right.
Very different than during that hiring process. Instead of you looking or talking to the person about what we want is somebody that can see and correct and manage the groups and have strong presence and attitude. And we want to critique that. We want to hire based off of that. Yep. If you also layered in how much you value hard work mm-hmm. and you say to the person during the hiring process in the first or second interview, you know, what we're looking for here is strong coaching. We're also looking for people that like to work. One mm-hmm. of our core values is hunger. Mm-hmm. And what we want is people that have a strong work ethic, that want to be professional coaches, that would rather be at the gym than anywhere else, that are willing to give a hand, go above and beyond the call of duty, to work beyond extended scheduled hours. Mm-hmm. That's just who we are and what we stand for. Yep. Now, if that's not you, I totally get that. You can still be a really good coach and not have that, mm-hmm. but it might not be the right fit for our team.
Right.
And what happens is you create this self-selection, yeah. this filter where people are gonna be like, well, I don't wanna be that. I think it sounds really cool to be a coach at a CrossFit gym. I just wanna be a part of this and be able to hang out here.
I've only got time for an hour. I can come in, coach the class, and then I'm out.
Or I want to coach because it would supplement my ability to be a CrossFit competitor. Mm. You see that a lot. I want to be a competitor. I want to coach because it's the easiest way to keep me in the gym, be able to train more.
Yeah.
And what they're not realizing is that's not your expectation.
Right.
Your expectation is when you're not coaching, you're busting your hump helping out the team.
Right.
And all of a sudden, like, okay, I still want to be a coach. I just don't think this is the right place for me. And it becomes a self-selection process. And what you'll find out is people aren't going to say, thanks for the offer, Pat. But you know, actually, they're not going to say, I'm not hungry. I don't want to work hard. I'm not willing to commit that much. They're going to say, I'm actually going to stay at my current place. I think that's actually is a good fit for me. I talked to my manager and we're going to work things out. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I'm actually going to see what else is, it's going to come up some other different way.
Cool. Third question. Flipping it a little bit. Advice to I'm assuming they're young people, but advice to young people who want to be a CrossFit coach, who want to be a full-time CrossFit coach, maybe aren't ready or aren't interested in opening their own affiliate. Somebody comes to you and says, Ben, I really would love to coach at CrossFit New England, right? What would you like to see them have already done? Like what, whether it's a resume thing or like, you know, these are the certifications I've had. Like what would really impress you? What would really make you think that this is a person who I want to be a coach here once they obviously get through the hiring process?
Yeah. Great question. And one that we recently went through the same thing. We went through a hiring little spell. We were trying to get some people on staff and we tried to do exactly that. What is it that we're looking for? Mm-hmm. And we had dozens of resumes to choose from. And we called back on a handful of ones that impressed us. And we found out his resumes, it doesn't tell the story. Yeah. It's not the deal. Yeah. And you know, in certain other industries, I think where it's a resume, whether it's experience or credentials, can make a big difference. Mm-hmm. I think that I don't even know if it does in other industries. I think it always comes down to the people. Mm-hmm. So what we look for, and this is maybe unique to us, maybe not, is we've defined what our three virtues are. Mm-hmm. The three things we're looking for in coaches. They are that our coaches are humble. One of the things that we look for in our coaches is that they're willing to put the team above everybody else. We're trying to create a team, not mm-hmm. a staff. Mm-hmm. And we call it that. The first is that they're humble and they want to be a team and put others before themselves. Sounds really obvious. But the other big part about being humble is that you're willing to accept feedback. So a coach might come in who's a level one seminar staff. He runs specialty seminars. He's owned his own gym. He's been to the CrossFit Games 3 times. Well, you seem like a terrific candidate, but are you willing to accept the feedback that we're going to give you mm-hmm. on a daily basis? Mm-hmm. That's the way we operate. It's what we found success with, is we're going to give you feedback literally every single time you finish a class. We're going to give you 1 to 5 things on things that you could improve upon. Mm-hmm. And right away, that self-selection process is going to go through people's heads like, that doesn't sound like something that's going to be enjoyable to me.
Yep.
The coachable coaches, the people that want to grow and the people that are humble enough to accept their position are what we're looking for. The mm-hmm. second one is hungry. And we already talked about that in yep. the last one.
Yep.
People that have it, they want to be professional coaches. They have an undying pursuit to make this a career. Mm-hmm. They want to work really hard. They'd rather be at the gym. And we've done a pretty nice job of this. They'd rather be at the gym than hanging with their buddies somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And the third one that we look for is people smarts or emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. It's probably the softest of the 3 skills and the hardest to critique upon, mm-hmm. but it's the easiest to see.
Right.
You can sense it. You can sense it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like on a first date, you know right away whether it's going to work yeah. or not within yeah. the first couple minutes. We try to create tangible, actionable, real things that we can measure on yep. whether this person has it or not.
Yep.
But people smarts is things like tact. It's like willingness to... good, sincere listeners and active listeners. Mm. It's people that are easy to trust and to talk to, people that have know how to adjust their tonality to different situations. Mm. And that's the kind of thing we're looking for. So maybe it's a long answer to your question, but the things that we're looking for is humble, hungry, people smart. And then the fourth one is the coaching acumen piece, mm. which we divide into the same way that the level four does now, yep. the level four CrossFit.
Yep.
It's basically your presence and attitude, your seeing and correcting, your ability to demo, teach, and manage groups, mm-hmm. and then build relationships. Of those, the ones that we feel like you need to have the best on is the ability to manage groups and presence and attitude. Mm-hmm. We can kind of work on seeing and correcting. That's a very teachable skill, mm-hmm. demoing very teachable skill. The ability to kind of be a leader, let's call it that. It's because some of those other ones up into leadership skills. Yep. Are what we're looking for the most.
Mm-hmm. And to sort of maybe get a little bit more tactical, I'm a 19-year-old kid. What do I need to, like, all of those things are really like,
yep.
those are great things to have.
But how do you get them?
Yeah. How do you think about that in terms of your own life? Like, am I coachable? Do I get feedback? Do I receive feedback? Well, all that stuff, like, okay, well, I don't think I do. Like,
yeah.
How do I get better at that?
Self-awareness.
Yeah.
It's one of the traits that's common amongst super high achievers from field to field, whether it's sports, entertainment, business, relationships, doesn't matter. People that are self-critical and self-aware and people that can like look at themselves in the mirror and figure out what their mm-hmm. weaknesses are the people that grow the most.
Yeah.
It's a growth mindset. Yeah. Having said that, the way you get better at it, once you're aware of where you are, most people, the biggest one there is the people smart. Everybody thinks they're a good communicator,
right.
and everybody thinks they're people smart.
Yeah. It's like everybody thinks they have common sense.
Everybody thinks they're a good driver.
Yeah. Yes.
Everybody thinks they're an above average driver.
Yeah.
If you do a survey of 10,000 people,
yep.
the majority will say that they're above average. Mm-hmm. Well, you realize that you can't be
the average can't be above average.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks they have above average communication skills, above average people smarts.
Yep.
It's just not the case.
Yep.
The only way to get better at these things is first and foremost is the self-awareness. The next is pounding on your craft.
Hmm.
Hours and hours and hours of mindful practice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the same driving analogy. The thought is that it takes 10,000 hours to be a master at your mm-hmm. craft. You know, Malcolm Gladwell stuff. That's 3 hours a day for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
That gets you to 10,000. Well, if you coach 3 hours a day for 10 years, most CrossFit coaches are not there yet, right?
Yep.
They're not even close yet. They're not even halfway.
Mm-hmm.
So realize how much farther you have to go.
Yeah.
Me included in that,
yep.
like really far. I've been coaching for about 18 years, but mm-hmm. CrossFit coaching for only 9 of those.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really long road. So some patience, some open-mindedness, and then the ability to see what's going on. And then the mindful approach where you have to realize the car analogy, that 10,000 hours doesn't work for you just sitting behind the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Most 40-year-old men, 40-year-old women have been driving cars for 10,000 hours.
Mm-hmm.
If you're 40, most of you guys have, most of them have done that. But how come not everyone's in the Indianapolis 500?
Right.
How come everyone's not a professional race car driver?
Over 40 still getting car accidents.
Yeah. They're not masters, yeah. Right? They're not master drivers. Yep. It's because almost all of those hours are on autopilot.
Yeah.
They're just, they're not totally attuned to it. Yep. It's not mindful practice. It's mm-hmm. not focused practice. Mm-hmm. So if you're going coaching your classes and every time you coach your classes to check a box, yep. you're not trying to get better. You're not actively assessing your abilities mm-hmm. along the way. It's not going to move the needle for you. Mm-hmm. You could do 30,000 hours and still be very, and yeah. still make no progress. Yep. You could literally make no progress if you didn't try to make progress along the way.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good place to end.
Great. Thanks, Pat.
Yeah, of course.